waiting all week for this, and here it is. The Illegal Curve Radio Show starts now. Here comes 2 hours of hard-hitting hockey talk, and here's your host, Drew the Bear Mindell.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba, and for all those joining us tonight live on www.ustream.tv/IllegalCurve, good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Radio Show. Hockey season is underway. Exhibition action is really flourishing all across North America, including live here tonight in Winnipeg. Ezra Ginsberg is not with us in studio tonight. He is live at the MTS Center, where the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Chicago Blackhawks puck drop there was about 6 minutes ago. So Ezra will be joining us at some point during the show, giving us an update on everything that's going on at the MTS Center tonight, as well as compiling some interviews and some clips for future shows next week. We'll be able to hear some of that, and we'll have that posted before then. It's hockey season is underway. It's an exciting time to be a hockey fan. Richard Pollock, welcome to the program.
Drew, thanks for having me tonight. Exhibition started last night.
Yeah.
I believe it was the first game, so they have some split squad games this year, which is kind of odd, but that's maybe a sign of moving forward.
Exciting, though.
Exciting to see hockey on. I know sometimes you get a little bit sick of seeing all this exhibition hockey, but at the same time, it's hockey, and so it's back, and it's great, and people are getting excited, and there's on-ice topics and line combinations to talk about, and actual hockey on ice topics.
Exactly. And everybody sort of crinkles their nose at exhibition hockey, but you can't have regular season hockey until you at least get through the exhibition hockey.
And I think the biggest thing about exhibition hockey, Drew, is you can't really take much from exhibition hockey on a team level.
Right.
But on a player-by-player level, especially younger players, there's a lot of value in these games. And if you're watching these players play, there is value in decipher exactly how a player may have a confidence level or a confidence issue, or how his confidence is, what his confidence level is, or how comfortable he feels in the environment. All that stuff, I think you can really glean that from these games. I mean, I remember last year when I went to see Tampa Bay play the Oilers.
This is a home game for Tampa Bay tonight, I believe.
But Drew, I remember watching and I saw Steven Stamkos, and you could really get a lot from his game. He looked confident. He was shooting the puck, and I mean, I realize that some people say exhibition hockey is meaningless. Maybe to the fan looking for meaning in the result, it is. But on a player-by-player level, and especially for management and coaches, there's a lot of value. And especially, I'll put you this way. There's a reason why there's GMs, Stan Bowman and Steve Yzerman, both in town tonight.
Scotty Bowman as well is in town tonight.
There's a reason that they're watching.
Yeah, I mean, if the games didn't matter, they wouldn't be here. It's
right.
That simple.
That's right.
I mean, so, exhibition hockey underway. We'll hear more from Ezra later on in the MTS Center. Let's start tonight's show in Columbus, where really the big news of the week, and it's sort of been an odd week, and that there's been news, but there hasn't been that overwhelming story that's dominated the news. I would say is the signing of Steve Mason to a contract extension by the Blue Jackets.
I have an issue with that signing.
Well, let's get to it. 2 years, he signed for 2 years, $5.8 million, an average annual salary value of $2.9 million. That's the cap hit over the next 2 years. Really, the important thing to know, the question really boils down to this, Richard. Are the Blue Jackets getting Steve Mason of 2008-2009, he of the 33 wins, the goals against average of 2.29, save percentage of .916, or are they getting the Steve Mason who regressed last year, only 20 wins, goals against average over 3.06, and a save percentage just over .900 at .901. Which Steve Mason are they getting?
Well, I don't know, and I mean, nobody knows. But I tell you what I do know. Is that Steve Mason signed in a contract extension going into his third year of his entry-level deal. Why are they giving him this contract? They don't know enough about him yet, I don't think. Is Jekyll and Hyde, 2 years ago he was great, last year he was awful. Probably cost Ken Hitchcock his job when the year before he was the main reason Ken Hitchcock was looked upon as one of the best coaches in the National Hockey League. It goes both ways. This is my issue, though, Drew. Steve Mason has a career save percentage, okay?
Yeah.
Both as 901, okay?
Yeah.
901. He has played 2 years in the National Hockey League, okay? I'm going to pull out the comparable because we're going to talk about comparing two players who are very similar. Two players who played on the World Junior Championship teams. Two players who have a lot of pressure on them. The other player, of course, is Carey Price.
Right.
Now, Carey Price's career save percentage. Carey Price's career save percentage is .912. Steve Mason's career save percentage is .908. Okay? Sorry. So yeah. .912, .908. Now, Carey Price has played 3 years. Follow me here. Steve Mason's played two.
Okay, I'm with you.
If Steve Mason has a great year, he would have a hard time. He'd have to have a very high save percentage to get up to the .912 for his career, right?
Probably about .920, I would think.
Around there. Which would be terrific.
Numbers, yeah.
Which would be terrific.
Yeah.
Carey Price, with a higher save percentage after 3 years is making $2.75 a year.
Right. Less.
For 2 years.
So he's making less than Steve Mason.
Less. But by the numbers, and he's probably better.
Yeah.
My point is this. Why, you know, what's, you're giving up all this bargaining position. First of all, goalies right now, the market's oversaturated with good goalies. First of all. Second of all, let him play. If he's bad, you can get him for cheaper. If he's good, he'd have to be amazing. And if he was amazing, you'd probably still get him for carry price dollars, $2.75. To me, this is an overpay. And I respect Scott Housen. I think he's a smart GM. This is an overpay, though, and an unnecessary overpay. You're not buying him from a free, you know, not buying him in the summer. You're not competing against other teams. He's not even a free agent right now.
All you're doing is buying his RFA for the second year in the contract.
They have no
but
bargaining
position.
That
shouldn't be an incentive to sign a guy.
Anthony Emmy's sitting on the market. Carey Price sits there for a long time. You think, first of all, Carey Price, in my opinion, is better than Steve Mason. But was there any kind of worry about Carey Price getting an offer sheet?
No, none. Nobody thought.
Steve Mason wouldn't have got one.
No, I mean, it is a peculiar move. Unless their mindset going into making the move is this: we want to commit to him in a show in the hope that it'll add that much more confidence to his game. You know, we want to sign him, show him that he's our guy. That, you know, even if he starts off with a bit of a rough spell or something like that, he's our guy because we're committed to him for the long term. The long term being 2 years, but, you know, the point is still well taken. Steve Mason knows he's going to be comfortable. I mean, he's going to be comfortable financially for the next couple of years.
You have to worry about the player's confidence and give him money to make sure that he's confident and secure. Then you probably have the wrong player in the first place.
Well, that's a very good point. You know, why do you need to, you know, does he have, I mean, it bears down to, does he have the talent?
Physically, maybe he does have the talent, but he came from a very successful team in the CHL. He obviously performed well at the World Junior level, but this is the National Hockey League. You need another year at least to see what you got. And if you got a good, if you have a good player, you're probably going to pay him carry price money, which is less than what you just paid. It doesn't make any sense to me. What's the reasoning behind this? I don't get it, and especially for a market and organization that's clearly struggling and is expecting, according to their president, about 8,500 people during the weeks. During the weekday games,
this is a team that
you're spending $3 million on a goalie who hasn't proven anything yet.
It's the question we asked in Rapid Fire last week. You know, is there a team that needs a strong start to the season more so than the Columbus Blue Jackets do?
And it was a very fair question.
And because I mean, given their attendance woes that the team themselves is admitting about, saying our season ticket base is way down about I think it was something like 5,000 or 4,500 season ticket holders. You know, to me, It is definitely an odd move. I mean,
unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, more so than just being odd, it is unnecessary, which is what sort of strikes me as the timing of it is just, you know, why are you in negotiations with this guy? He's not going anywhere. Why don't you wait 20 games into the season? And if you know, if this is what you want to pay him.
First of all, he's coming off a bad year, not a good year, so you have all the leverage.
Exactly. He's not going to, if you offered him, I think you could get him for $2 million. I mean, if you could probably get him for less, even. I mean, who knows? It just seems like they are overpaying, and it's an unnecessary overpayment.
Right.
Especially when the goaltending, I mean, the dollar figure for goaltenders is so
low.
Diminished. It's
so low
right now. Goaltenders are signing for bargain.
Turco, Niemi, all those guys. I mean, nothing.
That's right. Teams, bona fide cup contenders, are getting their goaltenders to play for pittance.
Right.
And you're paying your goaltender, who's a... You know, even if he returns to his form from 2 years ago, he's a fringe top 10 goaltender. He's not he's not an overwhelming, you know, guy who you can ride game in, game out. It just seems like a very odd timing for the move. That's another issue with Columbus I just sort of want to talk to you about. They've brought back Ken Hitchcock. Now, I know they're still paying his salary from firing him as a head coach.
Right.
Do you find it odd, though, that he's now responsible? I mean, let's get the...
Well,
I read
the other day that...
The official title is he's going to be responsible for personnel evaluation in the AHL, collegiate, and junior hockey ranks.
I read the other day that Dave Lewis just came off the Boston books. So if you're going to try and use him and use the money the right way, especially for an organization that's losing money... you know, Ken Hitchcock's a valuable talent evaluator. I don't have a problem with
it. Dave Lewis, the ex-head coach of the Bruins.
Yeah, years ago. So, you know, I mean, Scott Arneil's a good coach. He's not in jeopardy there. I don't see it being an issue at all. He seems to have a good relationship, Ken Hitchcock does, with Scott Housen. And I don't see it being a threat. And that's the only concern I'd have, is it being a threat. If it's not a threat, he's a very good talent evaluator. Nobody knows the game as well as Ken Hitchcock. You know, nobody really knows it better than Ken Hitchcock. He knows the game in and out. And, you know, for talent evaluation...
I mean, I don't think that Arneil really will be concerned, but to me, I just find it, you know, the guy that you fired, the guy that you said, no, we don't want you leading our team, you know, unless you're...
Well, you know him. He wears those welcome because he's too negative.
I know. Unless you're going to immediately assign that guy to other duties within the organization, It seems the timing is odd. Why don't you, if you want this guy to be your head evaluator,
fair enough.
Why aren't you making him your head evaluator immediately upon, you know, his demotion, quote
unquote?
Well,
it's a threat to you, to, you know, to Scott Housen's making a decision. He doesn't want to give him more power than he has.
No, I, of course not. You don't want.
He's just going to get a job, Drew. I actually wouldn't be surprised at all. Thinking about this the other day, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Ken Hitchcock's the head coach of the New York Rangers in November.
Well, I was going to say, is he the head coach now? Is he going to be the guy that, you know, is the head coach for all the teams that need to make a change halfway through the season?
All the veteran teams that need to make a change.
Yeah.
He's not coaching a young team.
Well, because he just can't. He's not suited for that. It's not his strong point.
The New York Rangers, I don't think, are going to succeed very well under John Tortorella and the way they're currently constructed. But a team with very good goaltending and very good defense is actually, to me, seems very suitable to a Ken Hitchcock-type system.
Okay. Moving to Phoenix, where, I mean, Saga never changes there in Phoenix.
Yeah, Drew, you just said it just exactly right there. It never changes. I mean, there's a lot of words written, but nothing ever changes.
Yeah, I mean, for those of you who missed it, the potential or the person who's allegedly in negotiations to iron out a new lease deal with the city of Glendale, his name is Matthew Hulsizer. He's a developer, he's something along those lines, from Chicago. He, you know, allegedly, you know, deposited $25 million into an account. Now, if you believe what the city of Glendale says, they say that he deposited this $25 million, to offset what they have to pay the NHL, you know, as part of the agreement that was reached by Glendale City Council and the NHL.
This is politics.
Now, if you believe what Scott Burnside of ESPN reported, he says, no. The city of Glendale has no chance and no rights to that money. This is just Hulsizer, you know, transferring money from one savings account to another in a show of good faith. And the city of Glendale pretty much out and out lied in their press release in saying that, you know, it made it seem like Hulsizer is going to be the one who's going to be paying the bill
City of Glendale. Where's little Timmy now saying how much he loves the Coyotes?
Well, little Timmy's unfortunately living in a city that's about to go bankrupt, I think.
Well, you realize why with decisions like they've made.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like it's such a... I think it's Crimea
River, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like such a gong show at this point. Like... How does any reputable city?
It is. But Glendale's a small city, Drew. It's not Phoenix.
I know. It's not a city of any significant population size whatsoever.
Phoenix is done in the desert. I would be floored at this point if the team had even stayed past this year. There's too many signs out there. That's why I don't like talking about it anymore. I think it's a done deal. I think they're done there. So.
It just seems it's so bush league, especially for a city to really, it's lying to its residents is what it's doing.
You know, Drew, yeah, I mean, it's politics.
It's not politics.
It's beyond politics at that point. You're involving politicians. This is all politics. It's the city of Glendale. That's politics.
Look, I know it's politics, but I mean, it's one thing for for the city council to lie to its residents about where, you know, sources of income are coming from. That's really what it is.
You just got to be thankful that we don't live there.
Well, I mean, our city council makes enough head-scratching decisions. I'm glad
they
haven't given...
Where's Ezzy to get into a political conversation?
Okay, well, Ezzy's at the game. That's good. You know, he's compiling interviews and guests and everything else.
Well, let's let our listeners know Ezzy's already secured one guest.
Exactly. Ezzy's already done good work there.
Well, we'll preview our next week is our NHL. You know what? We'll save it for later.
No, we'll do it now. We'll do it
twice. Eddie Olchuk is going to be, has agreed to come on our season preview show,
October 6th.
Wednesday night. The season starts on the Thursday. Eddie's going to be our first guest at 7:20. We'll work on getting two other guests that we've had on a couple of years in a row. Two terrific writers, Eric DeHatch, who is, for my money, the best hockey writer in the world. And Kevin Allen, who we had on last year of USA Today, very knowledgeable. He's a terrific writer as well. We'd like to get those three to be lined up. As for next week's show, is our pool preview, our fantasy show. 2 hours that you need to put on your iPod or listen to. Make sure you're intent on listening to because we're going to give you all the information you need for your fantasy pool. Next week on the show, Timo Seppä of Puck Prospectus, Gus Caceros of McKean's Magazine, and Justin Goldstein, I believe it's Goldstein or Goldman, I have to get that right, through Dauber, he writes for the Goalie Guild, is going to give you every single thing you need to know about your goalie for the fantasy pool.
That's right. So next week is the fantasy preview show. 2 weeks from now is the season preview
show.
We're
getting ready to go
Eddie
here.
Eddie Olchuk is booked for the season preview show. Other things going on. Well, hell, we still have an hour and 40 minutes left on this week's show, so you don't have to go anywhere. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Radio Show, 22 minutes past the hour here in Winnipeg. It's time for a segment that we like to call, Michael Remus,
Training Camp Tidbits.
Excellent. Well done. Normally we got a recording of that, but we didn't
get it. Loud live.
Yeah, exactly.
And in person.
Remus brings the heat on the live recording of the training camp tidbits. It's nicely done. We're going to take you across the NHL, mainly focusing on the Canadian teams to start. Really talk about any of the issues that have flared up so far in training camp. Richard, let's start in Montreal, where heightened expectations meet a Canadiens team this coming season. The question I have for you, Richard, is there any reason why this team has heightened expectations?
Well, you know, Drew, last year they came out, they upset the Washington Capitals, they upset the Pittsburgh Penguins, and there you go. I mean, that expectations are up in Montreal because they expect this team to be a Final Four team again. Talent-wise, they haven't changed much. They added Jeff Halpern, they lost Dominic Moore, probably a bit of a downgrade there. They have Carey Price, and they lost Jaroslav Halak. I actually think that's basically a wash, but maybe Halak's a little bit better, but not as significantly better than people think. They added Lars Eller, who's going to be a good young talent there. Need to see more of him, but overall, this is a team that just got squeaked into the playoffs. I mean, if they didn't play an easy division, they probably wouldn't have made the playoffs. This is a team that, to me, is a fringe playoff team again. I mean, expectations can be up, but I think that's unwarranted. And the Montreal fans are setting themselves up for very significant disappointment. What has this team done in the offseason to make me think, or you think, or Michael think, that they're going to be a Final Four squad? By luck, they may, but not certainly on the merit of their work in terms of outplaying their opposition every night. If they get good goaltending, Price is capable of setting them back there again, but I just don't see it happening.
That's what I don't understand. I mean, I know that, you know, in some markets, the hype is always just overbearing, even when the expectations, you know, and on paper, the reality shouldn't be that way.
Right.
But, you know, they're going to be exactly what you said. They're going to be a, you know, a seventh spot, you know, maybe sixth if they really play well. But they don't have any overwhelming talent. I don't look at that roster and say, man, that's a roster I'm afraid of on a night in, night out basis.
Isn't that the issue?
To me, it would be. I mean, that's why I don't understand the expectations. I mean,
they had a great playoff run.
They caught lightning in a bottle. They call a hot goaltender.
And I really like, yeah, exactly right. And I really like the naming of Brian Gionta as captain. I'm all for that. I think it's a great decision there by Jacques Martin and Pierre Gauthier. But the fact of the matter is, Drew, talent wins, and they don't have enough talent.
Yeah, that's really what it boils down to. If you want to talk about your favorite team, 780-KICK, 780-5425. If you're listening on Ustream and you want to call in from long distance, area code 204-780-5425. Let's move straight from Montreal as far as we can go in this country to Vancouver, where the Canucks are a team with legitimate Stanley Cup aspirations.
A lot of pressure there.
And a team where I do think the heightened expectations are expected of them. I mean, they're reasonable. Given what they did to that defense this year, I think that is a reasonable expectation is for Canucks fans to be thinking Western Conference champions or Western Conference finals.
The past 2 years, Drew, they've been sitting below the San Jose's, Detroit's, and Chicago's. This year, they're amongst those teams, if not above those teams in terms of expectations, from around the National Hockey League, you know, and it's warranted. You got the Sedins, and you have Mason Raymond, and you have Kessler, and you know, and you have guys like Alexander Burrows when he's going to be healthy, and you add in Danny Hamhuis and Keith Ballard. Ballard, I think, is underrated. Hamhuis is a very, very solid defensive defenseman, and you have one of the best goaltenders in the world, Roberto Luongo. You have everything there, but now it's different, Drew, because it's, you know, as teams say, it's different being the hunted as opposed to the hunter.
That's right. Can you really, the bullseye is squarely on you. Can you man up and handle the pressure?
And we'll see. But the pressure starts from day one.
Yeah, there's no easing into
now,
it. If they start off slowly.
They're lucky. They're in an awful division.
Yeah, they do have
and
a week.
So I see them being a top one or two seed just because, probably the number one seed in the conference, because I think they're arguably the most talented. But also take into account the fact that San Jose is playing L.A., tough team. Phoenix, pretty tough team still. I think underrated team. And Anaheim, tough team to play against. Those are four. They play them 24 times, okay?
Yeah.
Detroit or Chicago. Detroit plays Chicago. Chicago plays Detroit 6 times.
Nashville,
St. Louis, Columbus.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Edmonton, Calgary. Edmonton, awful, but good young talent. We'll talk about them in a second. Minnesota, really
going note about Minnesota.
Sideways.
Interesting note about Minnesota. Their shutout, their sellout streak is finished.
Yeah, no surprise there. Colorado, you know, working their way up, but still a ways to go. And Calgary, you know, a tough team to play against, but nothing to write home about.
Yeah.
That's your division. So you're going to win the division, probably. You're almost certainly going to win the division, and probably
if you don't win that division,
one.
There's a problem.
There's a significant issue.
So you're at least
there.
Locked, you know, assuming you win that division,
but
you're locked into
I'm
a top three.
I'm interested to see, we'll break down the exact parts of the team in our season preview on October 6th, but you can see already by the coverage on TSN, and more importantly, probably Sportsnet West here, Sportsnet Pacific, This is not a team that's going in with no pressure. This is a team that's going in with heightened expectations, and I like to see how they deal with it. But I do think it was a good first step to make Luongo, to take the C away from Luongo and allow him to just deal with playing net, because he has the most pressure.
That's right.
Goaltenders have the most pressure, and especially goaltenders with huge salaries and an Olympic gold medal.
And it's also important to point out that your quote-unquote excuse for their not winning the last couple of years, that being Dustin Byfuglien, because all we heard was Byfuglien during the playoffs, he's gone. Your excuse or potential for an excuse is out. You know, they traded him away, so really there's no reason. There's nothing stopping you at this point in time. It's expected that you're going to win it. Moving over to Calgary. You know, a team, you know, we're going to talk about it in rapid fire. It's really, it's a team where if, you know, Iginla, if Jokinen, and if Tange don't perform, Daryl Sutter's out of a job.
He's out of a job.
It's that simple. I mean, everybody knows what the stakes are. I mean, Kiprasov, it's going to come down to that. And is that one line good enough?
Is that a question or is that a rhetorical question? Is that a question to me?
You can answer it. I mean, we're going to talk about it in rapid fire.
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, from what we've seen, we'll talk about the line and stuff, but obviously, again, the signings I actually didn't mind at all. I thought they were pretty good signings. The issue wasn't, you know, Tangy, good signing, especially the money you're getting in. The Jokinen issue wasn't that you signed Jokinen. It was that you traded Jokinen and took on the Kotelik contract and then brought Jokinen back. It wasn't that you brought Jokinen back. I mean, Jokinen has something to prove. He's added 10 pounds. He's looking to shoot more, and I could see him turning out. But there's a lot of risk, and I could very well see him not turning out. And so is that what you're, you know, if you're going to the season banking on a lot of ifs,
It's not a good strategy.
Talking about Buffalo last week, Bill Hoppe kept saying, if. I said, that's a lot of ifs. Well, you know, a lot of ifs, you go into a season, you don't feel that good about it.
No.
So Calgary could end up playing well, if. Calgary could also end up playing poorly, if.
I think this could be, to me, on paper, this looks like a year where Calgary finally just falls apart and this is a rebuild for
it. I don't know, Drew. Again, look at this. Look at the division, though.
I know. It's a weak division. I know. They're still the second best team in that division. Well, I don't know.
No, they are.
Colorado played. I mean, look what Colorado did last year. Nobody expected them. I mean, could they do it again? Yes. I'm not necessarily expecting that.
Colorado would argue that they're the second best team in the division. And you can certainly make that argument, Drew. But you're playing against a lot of weak teams. Yeah. And in reality, you still have a fair amount of talent, especially in the back end and in net. So, Brent Sutter, you know what? The one thing we shouldn't discount is the Calgary, you know, we're talking about the expectations in Montreal because of the playoff run. And talk about Vancouver because of the additions. What about Calgary? There's no expectations this year. Maybe that, you know, last time they were actually good and made a run, there was no expectations. Since there's been expectations in Calgary, this team can get past the first round.
So maybe overlooking them and it's going to play to their success.
Exactly.
Let's go to their provincial neighbors, Edmonton, where really a team that there really is no expectations.
I got to say this. Steve Tambellini, people are talking about, they like the way Steve Tambellini is doing things there. I mean, he didn't intentionally lose. Let's relax a bit.
You got to remember, going into last year, there was no plan for that to be
year. So I don't like the credit. Tambellini's made some good moves, don't get me wrong, but it's not some kind of...
They weren't intending to tank. They were just so bad.
You know, I like the moves. He got rid of Steve Staios, and he's looking to get rid of Soraya, though that could have been handled in a better manner.
I'd say.
But I like, they have young talent. They certainly have a lot of young talent. But let's not give him all the credit in the world for being bad. And he's not the head guy, the head scout drafting there. Is he on his way to making a good squad? Yeah, probably. And is Tom Rennie the right guy to lead that team? Probably. But there's going to be learning. There's going to be a huge steep learning curve, and there's going to be a lot of hard times. But
you're not the Detroit Red Wings finding guys in the seventh round that prove to be bona fide NHL superstars when you're drafting first overall.
There's a lot of talent there, and you know what? It's a classic rebuilding project. Be bad for a long time, and you're going to be good. Pittsburgh, Chicago.
You watch it in any sport for the most part. Exactly right. It's, I mean, you know, you win by losing. At some point in time, it comes together.
And the problem is, if you do something like the Leafs, we can lead into the Leafs here. If you're like the Leafs and you're not that bad, or you trade all your picks when you are bad, it's hard to rebuild.
Well, the Leafs are just
it's a joke.
It really is just getting to the point where it's just a joke. They're that painfully bad.
Well, you know, they're showing the highlights. Jay Rosehill fighting Mike Commissaire. Come on, get that off my TV.
Don't show me highlights from Leafs training camp. I don't want to see highlights from the blue and white game. I don't.
No one cares.
I don't want to see intra-squad games.
Even Leafs fans don't care. They know their team doesn't have a hope in hell of making the playoffs.
Although I do find last night's game. I mean, last night's game was the free game for the exhibition. You couldn't buy tickets to last night's game. No. They were given away by Coke, I believe, is sponsored the game and gave all the tickets away.
I won't make any jokes there.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad you're going to pass that joke up there. But there were still scalpers scalping tickets outside the arena.
No surprise.
If you were paying any sort of significant dollar to watch an exhibition game.
I said it before in the show.
Yeah. Go ahead.
They should be paying you.
To watch that game last night? Probably. And the Leafs this year? Probably. And then the best part is, I mean, they got blown out last night, and the fans were still booing them.
I thought it was actually an interesting, it was a good Eric Hatch writing article about Calgary, and he had a very good point. You know, he was interviewing Olli Jokinen, and he asked him about the game, and Olli Jokinen looked at him and goes, I've been playing too long, and you've been writing too long to look into any kind of significance, to take any kind of significance from what's happened in the first few days of training camp.
Well, it's a very fair point. It's a fair, I mean, you know, everything is analyzed over and over and over again at this point in time.
And there's story and story and story, but you can write all the stories you want, but you can't give the Leafs more talent.
No, I mean, at some point in time, you look at their top three forward lines and you cringe.
You cringe.
You just actually cringe at the guys that they're rolling out there. And
you talk about improvement, Drew, and they could still improve by 5-10 points and still not even be close to a playoff spot. They had 14 points out of a playoff spot last year.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Bruins are still hoping against them.
Well, and the Bruins are looking good.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Bruins are looking good, and they're going to get another high first-round pick.
Yeah, so good for them.
Ottawa?
Last Canadian team, Ottawa. Really another team exceeded expectations last year.
Corey Kluson should have got Coach of the Year. I've said it many times in the show.
Many a time. Yeah. Very true. I mean, exceeding expectations last year. It's really they're returning a very similar roster.
Yeah, absolutely. A healthy roster, mind you. They had a lot of injuries last year.
Yeah, I mean, everybody forgets that they lost McCulloch late in the year last year, and he was a key component on that.
Remember they lost Kovalev?
That's right, they lost Kovalev. So this team is returning healthy.
Yep.
The question marks for Ottawa, I think, are Pascal Leclair and Brian Elliott.
Always. I mean, who knows? It's hard to predict who's going to be good there. If they can find one of those guys to be solid. I mean, last year they didn't even play that well, really. Elliott had his streaks, but they didn't play that well in the end. They finished, I think, was a 6th in the conference, or 5th in the conference.
Yeah, and nobody expected that.
They have a couple of good young players. They actually have a pretty good offensive roster if they stay healthy, but there's a lot of hits. First of all, Kovalev and Alfredson are both 37, so that's a huge issue. Mihalik's had, 16 knee surgeries. They need guys like Nick Foligno to really come up. They need Regan to continue to develop. I mean, if they could get something from any of their other young players, I mean, Erik Karlsson, guys like that. Their defense has a lot of puck movement skills, which I like. You know, for a while there, Ottawa got away from that. You know, they had Redden. Back in the day, they had Redden and Chara and Mezeros and Corvo and Pricing and all those guys who could move the puck up, and the forwards were always moving in the right direction, not coming back to help. And they got into the defensive guys, and they really weren't moving the puck at all. Now they have Gonchar and Kuba. We'll talk about his injury, but Gonchar and Kuba and Campoli and Erik Karlsson and even Brian Lee. I mean, all those guys...
Puck movers.
Can move the puck.
And I really think in this NHL... That's a key thing. I mean, what you really need is you need guys who can move the puck and get it and start the play out of your zone effectively and quickly.
Erik Karlsson's going to be... going to garner a lot of attention this year, I'll tell you that right now.
I assume you mean for good things.
Yeah.
It's just a necessity in this day and age in the NHL that you have to be able to get the puck out of your own zone.
Yeah, you have to.
As long as you can do that, I mean, without being defensive liabilities, I think you do have a legitimate opportunity for success. It might even be more important than who your forwards are up front to some extent.
Right.
You know, there's lots of guys who can, if you got guys who can play deep in the opponent's zone and do the dirty work, and then you got guys who can get the puck out of your zone quickly without being, I think that's just a key to any successful team. If you look at all the successful teams, and that's one thing they can do.
Look at I wrote about it in the Puck Perspectives book about Tampa adding some pieces on the back end who can move the puck,
Yeah.
Kubina can move the puck.
Well, I mean, then it's just...
Brett Clark can move the puck.
Yeah.
Just get the puck out of your own zone. It helps a lot.
Very much so. I mean, it's an important feature is really what it boils down to. And if you can't do it, I mean, you look at some of the teams that are...
Can I plug that book now, by the way, before we go to break?
Go ahead.
Okay. Puck Perspectives book came out last week. It's now available on Amazon.com. I know I contributed to the book and one of the authors of the book, so obviously I'm partial, but I think it's a terrific read, and I think it's certainly worth
it. You're a published author. Don't go along.
Okay.
Yes, you are.
Busting,
I think it's a terrific read, and I think it actually, if you want just for pool purposes, I think it's terrific in terms of its predictions, but I think it's worthwhile, and I think it's something that you can, it's not just something you'll pick up once and put down. If you can pick it up 100 times and find different things about it. There's essays in there, and there's team predictions.
I want an autographed copy.
Player profile. We're going to give away a book, if I can get it, by later in this week. We're going to give away a book on this show next week in our fantasy preview show.
There you go. Richard's promising to give away things. How about that?
There you go.
Okay. There you go. Let's go to break. When we come back, what are we talking about? 7:40. What's the 7:40? Oh, we're going
to... Drew,
we have
on.
A commercial. We're actually expecting to hear from a guest during the first intermission of the exhibition game. He's going to be joining us. He did a very interesting study
on the Free Press this morning.
It was in the Winnipeg Free Press earlier today. It's on the correlation between game attendance and on-ice success. And he found, he crunched the numbers, and he found out something very interesting about Winnipeg's long-term suitability for the NHL. So we're going to hear from him coming up in the next segment, whenever the NHL game in Winnipeg goes to first intermission is when he's going to be calling us. And then we're going to talk about the injuries that have plagued some teams early on in the year. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM.
Go back?
Yeah, welcome back to the program, Denise. That's awful.
Denise, just leave.
Wayne Gretzky's in this video.
I don't care.
Who's
I can't
in that
see the
video?
Awful. Just awful. We apologize to all our loyal listeners.
Yeah, please. Denise. If you want to get rid of us, we Denise apologizes.
How many people just change the channel?
Yeah.
You're costing us listeners.
I've never seen this video.
Just
like
go with Springsteen
Gretzky.
And call it a day.
Okay.
Actually, you know what? The only redeem is probably every other station when it was playing Nickelback anyway, so that might be, okay about
that. I think it was a 97.5. Yeah. Not that it's a bad station, but...
Yeah, the people in the Ustream chat are getting upset right now.
Yeah, you know what? Like, look what happened.
Whatever. Yeah, okay, it was because Gretzky was in it, and I had it in my head, so...
Well, that's
good. Oh, yeah, Nickelback, they're not hard to get out, let me tell
no,
you.
No, that song is really catchy. Shut up.
Okay, anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Radio Show. We're waiting to hear from Chris Mackey, the author of the study. He's going to be calling us during first intermission of the Lightning Blackhawks game that's taking place at the MTS Center. He's kind enough to join us during that intermission. Let's move on to some injury concerns in and around the NHL so far early in this training camp. Start in Calgary, where Matt Stajan apparently has separated his shoulder, so he's going to be out for really an indeterminate period of time at this point. They have a lot of high hopes for Matt Stajan. Really, ultimately, he was the one who was traded for Dion Phaneuf.
Him and Hagman and White.
But, I mean, Stajan was the, quote-unquote centerpiece of that deal.
I don't know if there is a centerpiece of that deal, but...
Well, okay. And if there was a centerpiece, I would think it would be Stajan, maybe? You're going to grant me that?
Maybe.
Anyways, if Stajan is injured long-term, and I mean a separated shoulder generally is at least a month or so,
yeah,
6 weeks.
Yeah, a month or so. And you know what, that injury, Drew, is sorry to interrupt, but that injury is extremely significant because of Damon Lankow's neck injury.
That's right.
And if that wasn't there, then I would say, it's important, but it's really important because when you go past Stajan and you go past Lankow, then I guess you've thrown Michael Backlund into the second line center role. You know, is that what you're going to do?
That's apparently what they've been reporting. That's what Vicky Hall, I believe, a friend of the program, has been saying. Something like, this is Backlund's opportunity to shine.
There you go. Well, you see what you got?
Yeah, but, I mean...
He's talented.
He's talented, but as the Flames, they didn't want to put him in this role.
Right.
They wanted Stajan to, they expected him to be the second liner there.
It's not pretty already. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
It's not pretty. And I think what you have in Calgary is you have a team that needs offense. A team that couldn't score last year. And now you're pulling out Damon Lankow, who obviously has slowed down significantly. But Damon Lankow, he plays some tough minutes. And then Matt Stajan, who you can argue all about, his suitability as a number one center. But if he's a number two center, he's not bad. So he's better than probably what you had before. So.
Right.
Do we have Chris on the line?
Is that Chris on the line, Denise?
Yeah. All right, there we go.
Chris Mackey, welcome to the Illegal Curve Radio Show.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Chris, your website is www.mynhlincludeswinnipeg.com and www.manitobamythbusters.com. Before we get into the gist of the study, can you tell us a little bit about both of those websites?
Sure. Well, basically, back in 2006, a group of us got together and started to go through kind of jet memorabilia and old newspaper clippings, that sort of thing, and started to realize that some of the numbers kind of intrigued us. So we started to look a little bit deeper into it, and we started to realize that a lot of media reports out there, and we added two and two together, and it wasn't long from there that we realized that maybe some of the myths that are out there really aren't so true. And that kind of just snowballed into 12 myth-busting efforts, arena too small, tickets too costly, that sort of thing, and the next stage was, of course, press releases like the one today.
That's an excellent segue into what you mentioned today. We saw the report cited in the Winnipeg Free Press, and I went and I checked out the report. For our listeners who might not be aware of it, can you sort of tell us what your hypothesis was, and then we'll get to your conclusions afterwards?
Well, certainly. Back about a year and a half ago, Gary Bettman had talked about, you know, he expected the Phoenix market to rebound, not unlike what Chicago has went through. And I started to think about that. You know, clearly attendance goes up when the on-ice performance does as well. But how can you quantify statements like that? So we kind of kicked it around for some time, and we started to go back into the archive, if you will, taking a look at Winnipeg Jet attendance history, and realizing that there's got to be a way to measure this. So we come up with taking the total average game attendance by season and dividing it by the total number of points in the standings. Basically, this takes a team player and team on-ice performance into account to try and standardize the look at the attendance. So that was the first thing we did. And then the second thing we did is we actually used statistical analysis to try and correlate the attendance data with that, with the points in the standings. So that's kind of what the report did. It was very numbers-based, as you can imagine. Yeah. And, of course, past history doesn't lie. And we started to say, well, geez, let's take a look at current state. So we kind of looked at two different eras, 79 to 95, which was the 16 years the Jets played. We didn't include 1996. We just didn't feel it was fair to include a lame duck season. And then we looked at the more modern era, the 14 years from 1995 to 2010, and very, very quickly realized that the Winnipeg Jets attendance numbers, when you take the on-ice performance into account, was actually one of the better ones when you compare it to the league today.
And I mean, that's a very interesting study that you did, now, Chris. Was there one thing that stood out to you from all the numbers that you obviously computed? Was there one number, one thing that stood out to you really from everything that you put together?
Well, you know, the thing that was surprising to us when we did that correlation, only in today's NHL, only Detroit and San Jose had a better correlation. And simply put, what that means is, if you have a strong positive correlation, it means as the attendance will rise when the points in the standings rise.
Right.
In other words, a fair weather market.
Right.
And a negative correlation is the opposite. If you can imagine attendance rising when the number of points drops. Now, that seems counterintuitive.
Right.
But we went back to the data, and we realized a club like Columbus, when they came into the league, they had large crowd and few points in the standings. And over time, we realized that the attendance has dropped, meanwhile the on-ice performance has improved. And so it kind of led us to totally a conclusion that we didn't expect off the bat, which was potentially market goodwill is starting to become exhausted in markets like Columbus, Phoenix, Atlanta, and potentially Nashville and Florida.
So really what you're dealing with, you know, non-traditional hockey markets, at first what you're saying is that, you know, there might be a novelty to having a new act in town so that the on-ice performance doesn't matter so much. But as that novelty wears off, people are demanding that you know, your performance has to be at an exceptional level for them to shell out their money to come see you.
That's certainly one hypothesis that is out there. The other thing that we haven't figured out yet, obviously it's going to have to be another study, but other markets did well. San Jose, Dallas, Denver. There was almost as many teams that showed this effect as those that didn't. And so we still aren't sure what the breakdown is. Now, I think winning helps. Minnesota, those sorts of markets, they're either traditional markets, as we would refer to them more commonly, or they were winners for many years when they first arrived. Colorado is a great example where it doesn't matter if it's a hockey market or not, that team basically was a powerhouse for the first decade of existence, so it's pretty easy to build a fan base and a following when you have that good fortune.
Do you worry about the Winnipeg market after a few years, or do you think that the numbers that you've put together here bode well for Winnipeg's ability to sustain an NHL team?
You know, I think everyone talks about a honeymoon effect, and there's no doubt that that long-suffering fans of the Winnipeg Jets and the departure of the team,
right.
There's no doubt that that's going to happen. Now, how long does that exist before it plateaus and then falls off? I really couldn't say. I think there's that theory out there, but no one's really been able to quantify it. I will say this, though, that the marketplace is so ripe for the game now that right. It seems to me that if someone gets a season ticket, they'd have to think long and hard about letting it go, because I'm sure there's going to be a long waiting list for the first few years. So in effect, it might be the end of one honeymoon for one season ticket holder after a few seasons. And the next one is ready to jump in line and take their spot very quickly. Same thing about luxury box holders. You know, right now I think the Moose have a waiting list almost as long as the number of suites that they've
Absolutely.
Rented out.
It's an extensive waiting list.
So if you could imagine as a company letting go a luxury box, say, I don't know, after 6 or 7 years,
right.
you know it's going to be an awful long time before your turn's going to come back through the waiting list to get back on again. So even though you may potentially want to let it go, there's some strong reasons why you may not want to.
Chris, you know, you mentioned in your study you also do a comparison looking at Quebec City, as they're the other, you know, NHL city that's rumored to be,
right.
or Canadian city that's rumored to get an NHL team back. And while your numbers say that, you know, attendance in Quebec City would probably be higher than in Winnipeg, and the floor for attendance, as in, you know, what the sort of average minimum would be, would also be higher than Winnipeg's, you say that Winnipeg would have a better stability rating than Quebec, a stability correlation. Can you sort
yeah.
of discuss that, talk about that for a bit?
Sure. Well, just to answer your second question first, the correlation for Winnipeg, it's practically zero, which is, in other words, the attendance will stay fairly consistent and steady, whereas the team on-ice performance can ebb and flow. Mm-hmm. They're literally 0.07. It's that close to being perfectly
wow.
zero. Whereas Quebec isn't far off. They're like a 0.21. They're still in the top third of the NHL if Quebec were to return. Now, getting to your question about attendances, there's no doubt that after many, many years of poor on-ice performance for the Nordique, that the attendance there was still one of the best in the NHL. And what we looked at was, at the time, the NHL attendance was much lower in that first era mm-hmm. than in the second. And certainly the growth of the game has shown that. But Quebec's attendance was above the league average 10 out of 16 seasons in that first era. So their numbers do show a significant improvement against the league average at the time, and that's not what we're calling for in the future, because that is a growth of over 24% between eras for the league, but we anticipate Quebec to do as well.
Do you anticipate, Chris, last question here, let you get back to the game, do you anticipate that a team will be back in Winnipeg within the next, you know, within the next year?
You know, it's really hard to say. We've come a long way. I was thinking about during the game of Tampa Bay here last mm-hmm. year, to have rumored that the team was 15 minutes from relocation back to Manitoba.
Right.
To have Gary Bettman come out this summer at the State of the League address before Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals and talk up Winnipeg again. Excuse me. To name names, True North and Mark Chipman, David Thompson, as potential owners with a bona fide offer. Bona fide is a real strong term for Gary Bettman to use, and I wouldn't have dreamed a year ago we would have been that far.
Chris.
So we are now approved as a market. Our arena has been validated by Bettman.
Yep.
Even Eastern Canadian reporters have kind of thrown that jab at Bettman, and he's come to Winnipeg's defense in that regard, which I never thought I'd be saying to anyone. I don't know if a year or two. There's certainly lots of rumors out there about, of course, Phoenix, and if not Phoenix, possibly Atlanta. And, you know, that's of course, the usual suspects. You get into about half a dozen teams. What I would say this is, the patience of a multi-billionaire, because that's what David Thompson is, he's one of the richest people on earth, is generally short. They generally get what they want because they have a cash to back it up. And my point here is this, is if they cannot relocate a team to a David Thompson and Mark Chipman, I have a feeling they're going to expand, And the only reason why I can offer this is because the NHL expands at probably the most unlikeliest times that they should be.
They want the upfront money is what they want.
Which, of course, with six teams or more losing money consistently, it's quite possible that this could be the time where a Quebec Or and a David Thompson both line up for expansion teams.
Chris Mackey of ManitobaMythbusters.com and MyNHLIncludesWinnipeg.com. Thanks very much for joining us tonight on the Illegal Curve Radio Show. Enjoy the rest of the hockey game.
Hey, thank you very much, Phyllis. Take care.
Take care, Chris. Thanks very much.
Good spot. It was good.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting study. You know, this is a guy. He's a guy, you know, doing the work on his own.
Yep.
You know, and full marks to Chris for taking the time and effort to go ahead and do that.
Study. He did some correlations there, and those are interesting numbers, as he said, as he alluded to. And you know, again, all signs point in the right direction if you're a fan of Winnipeg. Unfortunately, if you're a fan of the Coyotes, it's a little different. But
I think there's probably a lot of truth in this study. I mean, you and I have both been to...
We've talked all about this,
We've seen way too many bad Jets teams, and the arena's been packed for all those bad games.
Batman's
on board.
But he's been on board for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. People didn't think that... We talked about this on last year in the show. I thought it then. I think it's more so now. It's my... Everybody's on board, I think. I think this is a... You know, an interesting point in Tim Campbell's article, Winnipeg Free Press. Interesting point in his article today was how they changed the prices for tonight's game. The price points were different than they were last year in that the highest price came down $10. I think the lowest price went up around $10.
Yeah.
And basically they were saying that they're testing out the market.
And I think there's
a lot of truth to that. And I think that there's a lot more going on behind the scenes than people realize. And I think the people who are making decisions are the right people. And I think that's the biggest thing here for Winnipeggers to understand is that, and Chris alluded to it, people who, they have money, but they also go about things the right way, and I think that's going to pay off. We've talked about it before, but it's going to pay off. So.
Yeah, all the signs, everything you point to, everything, you know, if you had a checklist, everything, well, here's the highlights from the MTSN right now, actually. Coming up here, it looks like 0-0, at least 10 minutes through the game. We're watching that on TSN Sports Center. Who is that?
Stamkos,
yeah.
Nice Drew, what are you?
I couldn't see the number.
Fully here?
I couldn't see the number. I thought I saw nine. I thought Stamkos is 1-0 in
half
Tampa
fully,
Bay.
Yeah, half fully. Good one, Davis. Yeah.
Couldn't see the number. Stamkos ended up being the one who scored. Just a quick note out of Montreal. They pulled Carey Price out of the exhibition game.
Yeah.
He let in 4 goals on 9 shots, and he was booed roundly leaving the ice.
Sounds about right for the Montreal fans already getting a little bit anxious.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem being, you're filling in from Halleck and you have big shoes to fill because he was the godsend last year.
Right.
And it's exhibition people. You shouldn't be paying enough attention to the game to know that he gave up four goals on nine shots.
Expectations shouldn't be high, but they're going to be high this year, and it's going to probably be one of the reasons why Montreal feels the pressure.
Just trade him to Colorado and he can win 3 cups there. You know, that's what happened last time you guys booed your goaltender.
Yeah, with a talent level like Carey Price. People don't realize how young Carey Price is. With a talent level like Carey Price, you got to be patient. And you know what? I have to be honest here. Right before we go to break, one of my biggest beefs is when I don't understand. I don't mind when fans...
He's getting emotional, folks.
Should
emotional.
Save this till the
end? I don't mind. No, I don't mind. Yeah, I should probably say
improper.
I don't mind when fans boo teams. They pay money to see teams. When fans boo their own home players, it doesn't make sense to me. If you boo a player, he's going to play worse. He's going to get down on himself. If you cheer a player, he's going to play better. It's in your best interest to cheer the player. The camera's falling here. If you were to cheer Carey Price, he would probably feel like, okay, I can get over that, and I can come back next game. If you boo him and stay on him and stay on him, he's only going to get down on himself, and the lack of confidence is going to end up being possibly the downfall of the team. So if you're a fan, stop booing particular players.
Good. Feel better?
Let's go to break.
Okay. We'll leave it there. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM.